Welcome here to Scandinavian Tennis Podcast. My name is Rune Thomsen.
And my name is Linus Eriksson. Here we will talk you through this week's most interesting happenings on the tennis tours.
Vamos, let's go!
I hope the...
Rune Thomsen, how are you today?
I'm very fine, Linus. I'm looking forward to our second Scandinavian tennis podcast here. So yeah, have been a week ago. So let's go again.
Yeah, it's about time. And this week we will start and talking about the Finnish tennis that we didn't forget, but we didn't mention last week. So my first question is, what do we have to say about Finland this week?
I mean, we have, of course, the big guys, Rosevoy playing. I think that last week he did quite okay in Monte Carlo, made second round from quali. And yeah, he's the top guy there from Finland. And then they have some men's below, Otto Virtanen, Patrick Salminen, And the Women's Fed Cup was also in action at home soil in Biomark here, but they didn't do so well there. But I also think that for the Finnish team, they missed out their best players. This Anastasia Kolikova that has changed passport from Russia to Finland because she's been practicing there for many, many years. But I don't know whether it was something with the current crisis with Russia, why she wasn't playing or she's injured.
No, I actually think because we have a guest later on this episode that will come on, Fredrik Löfven, and he told me when I was speaking with him that actually the players from Finland, they were quite unlucky because all their best players got sick that week or the week before. Yeah. So I think they were really unlucky and had a pretty inexperienced team for this Fed Cup, which was unfortunate because it was at home. But yeah. That's how it was, I think. Yeah. If we move on to the... I was thinking that we will start with and talking a little bit about Viktor Durasovic this week. He lost the first round in the Mexico Challenger in three sets. And Viktor has had quite a tough year so far. I think 5-12 with only one main draw win. And he have played in more challengers and ATP this year. And my question is, do you think it's time to step down and play a little bit more easier future for him in the future now?
I think Viktor is a very interesting case. I mean, all tennis players are kind of interesting because he had a very, very high level as very, very young, both under 16 and also under 18, actually, where he didn't play so much. But he played a lot of pros, and right when he was 18, 19, for a very, very long time, he reached his highest ATP ranking just inside 500, I think 420, and he was like there for quite a while, and everybody could see that he was promising, but he kind of like lack of taking the next step made him maybe stay a little bit too long in this 400-500 zone that can be dangerous for any player to stay in, because if you don't move up and start playing against better players, your game might even drop a little bit. But I think he's a very interesting case. Then after COVID, he also had a very, very tough start of the year in 2020. And then he actually started doing really, really well in 2021. And had a very good year playing main draw in Stockholm Open, where he played Murray, and he also played Murray another time before that year. So I think that he is a guy that is how do you say in English? In Danish, it is elevator player, escalator player, you can say. Exactly. Yeah. Yo-yo.
Yeah.
Where he has bad periods like everybody else also apparently, but I think that he has shown before in his career that he can come back. So I think 5-12 is of course not good for any pro players, but I think that he might have the tools to change it
But do you think he should keep trying to play challengers, or should he go play one or two future to get some wins under his belt? How would you do?
I think he should keep going playing challengers for sure. His ranking is 320 or 325, yeah, around that. And I think, yeah, that at this time he needs to use that ranking to get into challengers instead of going down and playing futures. So I'll say that stay there and hanging, and some matches are so close,
yeah,
and thin in margins. So it's a matter of time when it will change, I think.
And another player that have played a lot of challengers the year before is Leo Borg, that has actually started to win some matches at the future level now. He's been grinding in Egypt this year in yes, Sharm el-Sheikh.
And he had
yeah?
Yes, can we say it's a little bit of a breakthrough for him last week?
I would
I think it was first quarter final.
Yeah.
I think it was first quarter, and I must say that I mean, Cairo isn't, I mean, everybody that's played in Cairo and know how the place is knows it's one of the most toughest places to compete, because everything is so unorthodox and very tough mentally to cope. But I think that he beats a very good Slovak player. I think it's maybe same age as himself, maybe 1 or 2 years younger, very mm-hmm, talented, and then he beats second seed Apostle, that I must say has been off for tennis, been doing coaching due to lack of money, financial situation. But then middle of last year, he got back on the tour and he can play, of course. So it is a good win, obviously. But then I'm a little bit, not disappointed, but surprised that he's losing to Lithuanian Gaubas. He's same age as Leo. He's 1 year younger than Leo. My bad. But I think he's a very defensive player. Of course, he grinds a lot. But I think with a little bit of confidence, Leo should have the game to go through him. And especially in Cairo, where the ball is, it's not so slow there. It's very bouncy. And I think that that should be beneficial. But again, of course, they're both very young, standing in the first quarterfinal of a 15. So it's a lot of pressure.
But I still think it's quite positive for Leo that he actually almost, I think he has won one main draw match every week except for one this year, which I think is absolutely a good start of the year. Or
of course, but he's also, I mean, I have to say it honestly, I think that he's also first year of pro, and he was top 10 junior. So I mean, is minimum you can expect.
Okay,
I would say.
But I mean, I don't know Leo Borg personally, but he can probably still get some wild cards to challenger with his name later on this year. Should he keep trying to go for them? What do you think?
I think that it's a matter of what him and his teams are working on and what the objects of his career is.
Yeah.
Because I think that you need some matches, and now he's been playing like 5 or 6 tournaments this year. And I guess that if he keeps going that, it would be fine to add a challenger once in a while. But again, if it ends up like it did in 2020 and in 2021, where the match stats was maybe not in his favor, I think that maybe then it's not so beneficial to do that.
2021, when you say the match stats was maybe not in his favor, it was 1-12. So it was really not
exactly
in his favor.
Exactly.
Yes. If we move on to our friend Jonathan Merida, he's actually, I think when this episode will be released, he's probably at the moment playing against Donald Young in, is it Sarasota Challenger? The second...
Tallahassee,
sorry. Jonathan has only played in the States and in Mexico this year. What do you think about those choices?
I think that the hard court he should have skipped, I can say that. I think that he was not well prepared to do that. And I think also clay is better for him, especially when he plays challenger level. I think he has a better shot to beat higher ranked players on clay, even whether it's a little bit altitude or it's American clay or it's European clay. I still think that that's in his favor. I was very happy to see that he beat Nick Hart so big last night, because mm-hmm, Nick is very strong on American clay, and he grew up in or had his tennis education in IMG, so he's used to play on the American clay. So I think winning 1 and 3 is a very good confidence boost for him. And now he's playing an interesting guy because Donald Young, I think if everybody asked about Donald Young 20 years ago, they will say for sure, new number one in the world.
Yeah.
He was so young when he became number one in juniors, and he was crushing the game, and he was top 100 very, very fast. But then he has been out for a long, long time. And I think that he has missed his shot, if I should be honest. So I think Jonathan has a good chance there. But of course, he's tricky because he's lefty and he has experience. But I think that Jonathan is at least 50-50 in that match for tonight. Yeah.
It's a really fun matchup for sure. I remember when I was young, Donald Young was so hyped. It was it was unbelievable. If we move on to another Swedish player, Carl Friberg. Carl Friberg has played in Monastir, lost the second round qualifying there. And Carl Friberg has had quite a tough year. He has only made it through to the main draw. He had won a main draw match twice, I think, this year. Is it time to do something there for Friberg? Because I mean, it's tough times.
I think that if you look where he plays and how he scheduled his tournament, I think there you have a good idea of what to work on, because he was in Lithuania, then going to US for clay, then going back to Europe on clay, then going to Monastir on hard. I think that this tournament schedule, it points in all directions. So that is for sure one thing that if I was Carl, I would look into. Of course, something is about where you get into main draw or not. I understand that. But yeah. I also think there has to be some kind of consistency in the way you put your schedule up.
Yeah. His ranking is 863 now. His all-time high, 632. I mean, should he try to change something in his setup as well, do you think? I think he's traveling alone now. He's practicing at Good to Great since many years ago. I mean, is there time to do a bigger change than just look into the schedule?
I think that Carl is a tough case because he was pronounced by Swedish tennis to be a very big hope when he was junior. He was top 10 Tennis Europe, as I remember. And he also quite fast went up the ITF junior ladder, at least to around 100, where then he stayed. And I think that all this both pressure but also ambitions on his behalf has made his mentality a little bit unpredictable when he's playing, and I think that is something he should have phased out of his game when he was junior, because Carl can play on very high level, everybody can see that, nobody has to doubt that, but he can also drop very, very fast mentally, and I think that is his biggest issue to make it higher.
And I guess
I don't know, maybe he has a mental coach, but at least maybe have someone that could help him would be beneficial, and also maybe with the tournament plan.
Yeah. And if we move on to the, biggest topic this week, the Fed Cup or Billie Jean King Cup in Vierumäki, and where the girls were in action. If we start with the Swedish team, before the week started, I heard an interview with the captain, Mattias Arvidsson, and he said that there was only good vibes in the Swedish team. And I wonder if can that really be correct when both Peterson and Björklund had said no? Of course, there was some doubts in the team, or?
I mean, I think that I was wrong. I should be the first to admit it publicly. I was wrong. Last week, I almost relegated both Denmark and Sweden without them have been hitting any balls, and they both made it still in the first division. So first of all, I must apologize for that. Yeah. But I think that, of course, there must be some doubts, but I think also it's also very important as a captain for a team, regardless whether you are top favorite or you are in the bottom, I think it's always very important that you show to the rest of the world that we're gonna make it. This is also a very important lecture for coaches in other sports, that if you don't really believe it yourself, who else should believe it in you and your team? So yeah. I think that maybe Matthias wasn't 100% honest about how he felt inside, but yeah. I think he at least tried to declare it and therefore gave maybe the girls some confidence that showing on public television or public interview, he also tells the girls, okay, we can do this.
Yeah.
So I think that was maybe, it was more a mental announcement than maybe how he saw the team.
Yeah, that was probably right. And I must say, I'm quite impressed that the Swedish team made it through. Kajsa Henneman did an impressive week. She had two really good three actually really good singles win during the week. Beat two top 200 players, she crushed Maligina in the playoff match. They did a couple of good doubles wins as well. So that was impressive, I must say. Do you agree?
I think that it's both, now we can add them a little bit. I think both for the Danish and the Swedish team, that what this week showed us was that even without the best, the next picks are ready to step up. Because I think what Kajsa did was stepping up. She showed that, okay, even without Rebecca, I am a player that Matthias and the team can put into the match and have confidence that I will do good. And I think that even her preparation that we talked about a little bit also hasn't been so good because she's been out with an injury. She hasn't been playing on clay this year before. And I think, I mean, winning these matches in maybe not with super much pressure, but at least a little bit of pressure is still quite good, because, I mean, of course, there's pressure always, but for them, the expectation was, okay, it is a matter of surviving, and we can always use the excuse, we were playing without our best players. So whatever happens, we do our best. And I think maybe that was also the mental approach for the Swedish girls before the matches.
I think you're right. And it will be interesting to see the upcoming weeks, because, I mean, maybe Henneman can grow from this experience and taking this responsibility a level.
There's a chance. Absolutely. But also, I mean, it's always different. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but last year, there was maybe the biggest upset in tennis ever, or at least in many, many years, where this young Belarus boy without any ranking, junior ranked around 100, he beat Diego Schwartzman in Cordoba in Argentinian soil, which is like, unbelievable. And I think you see these rare or surprises in team matches more often than you see it in individual competition. And I think the reason why is because the mental dynamic for a team match is very different than going into a normal tournament. So, and plus you can have your coach on the side change. So I think I would say, of course, Kajsa overperformed a little bit for what she's normally doing, because she beat higher ranked players, but it's still inside the gap that is possible in a team match and in a Fed Cup rubber.
That's correct. And I will also mention the Danish team again that we talked about last week, that had some discussions inside the team when Olga Helme were leaving the team. But they also made it through at the end, which was also pretty strong, with the preparations in mind there.
Absolutely. And there were only three players, because the fourth player, Natasha Skov, was sick. So she never made it to Turkey. So, I mean, yeah, it must be the smallest squad ever that make it in Division One of Billie Jean. So very impressive. And of course, we have to say, because we are honest podcast, we have to say that they got helped a little bit, that Georgia's best player was injured for the week. But nothing taking away from the Danish team or the Swedish team, but I think with a stronger lineup and a fully fit Georgian player, it would have been difficult.
Probably, but Kvartsi didn't win a set, I think, during the week.
No, and she pulled out for everything, and she pulled out for doubles. But the funny thing is, she's playing Istanbul quali this weekend. I don't know how she did it, but
That's quite interesting. And Rebecca Peterson as well. She seems to be again.
I
want to bring up another question here regarding the captains for these teams. So, some teams are, of course, favorites to be promoted and to win the matches, and some teams are like fighting from behind. But I mean, in let's say for football, for example, if a team has have expectations of winning matches and get promoted, but doesn't succeed, the captain or the manager will take the responsibility and sometimes, I mean, step down or actually get fired. Do you think it should be the same in tennis? For example, if Denmark or Sweden didn't have made it through and got negligated, what's the captain's responsibility?
I think there is some responsibility. Mm. But again, if we compare to football, the manager or the coach in football, they work with these players all year round. They have, every day to work what they want to do. Here on the team and in tennis, they all play individually in 52 weeks, and then they come in the last week, and that's where the captain can have something to say about it. I think the dynamic on the team is very important, which is also shown with in the Danish example, that you have three players, but they're all very happy together and they have fun together, and that kind of brings a good environment to perform. But besides that, then I think it's mostly tactical. Of course, a captain have an idea of how the lineup is for the opponents, so you try to match it as good as you can. But whether the players are performing in that week where you have the Billie Jean Cup, I think it's out of the hand for the captain. So I think it would be unfair to sack anybody after just being relegated in Billie Jean. I think that is too much to ask for. But of course, if there was more team competition throughout the year, then it would be a more focus point for the captain, because then he would have not this excuse that he's not working with the players for the rest of the year.
I understand. We will let the Norwegian national manager in here for answering some questions now, Rune. Now we're joined by the national team manager for Norway, Fredrik Löfven. Fredrik, how are your feelings after this weekend in Finland?
It's actually very, very, very good. So I'm a bit tired, but I'm very happy to be at home and happy with a good result.
Of course. Shortly, how was the weekend? Norway proceeded to go up a level, but how was the week overall?
It was a very good week. It was in Virumäki in Finland, in the forest. It was a very good week. We had a good team, nice team, and a good sort of team spirit in the team. So we had a lot of fun and we practiced hard, and it was long days at the club and all this. But it was a very, very nice week.
Yeah. Before we jump into the main questions here, you said you were practicing hard, and in your team you had four players with you. Two of them were playing all the matches. Did you had a lot of practice with the other two players to keep them ready, or how did you manage that situation?
Yeah, we did. The two players that were playing, they could sort of choose, and they could feel their bodies and sort of. So we had one girl was practicing a lot. She always likes to practice a lot. And the other one was practicing a little less and wanted to be ready with the body. So, and the other two were not playing, were getting ready for if they were going to play. So they were practicing twice a day and at the gym. And it was a very good week for them. Even if they didn't play in the matches, I think this week was very good for them.
Yeah. One of the players that were playing a lot, Ulrika Ekeri, she flew over to Finland after a great week in the States, but had two quite tough three-set losses during this week in the round robin stage, for example. How did you experience her feelings after those single matches?
Yeah, she was definitely not happy. She's a big fighter and really wanted to. She really liked these matches, these team matches, playing for a country. So she was not happy losing all three matches. But after all, I think she also understood that she was actually playing quite well, and especially in the first match when she played Sherif from Egypt, so it's like 60 in the world. She played a really good match and actually deserved to win that match. She had break points, I think, to 4-2 in the second and had the first set. So she was really, really playing well, and I have never seen her play that well, actually. So, but of course, she's a winner, or she really wants to win all the time. So she was not happy, but she was it was amazing how quick after the loss she sort of was getting ready for doubles. She was playing, you know, the second round, so the doubles was only 30 minutes after she lost the match, but she was so quick to sort of just turn around and go in for the doubles. So that was very professional and very, very good.
Interesting. So how did you, I mean, you and Jörgen, how did you coach her between that singles and the doubles? Because it's a quite a tough situation, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it was just, she can sometimes, you know, talk too much negative thoughts about herself, like that she was doing that wrong and that wrong, and she could do that better and all this. But we was just trying to stay positive and sort of just trying to explain all the good things she was doing. Mm-hmm. And then sort of just, that was just one more match, and it's a final match. And we also talked a lot to Malena then, so she was also trying extra to sort of be positive and talk to her and sort of get her into the doubles. So it worked out very well.
Mm-hmm. And your other single player, or doubles players as well, Malena Helge, she did really good results during the whole week. How was her performance from your perspective?
Yeah, very solid. First match, she was, I think, a bit nervous. She was actually a bit nervous in all matches in the first set. She was like a bit tensed and all this. But then after a few games, she really sort of took control of the matches, and she played very well. And she actually have been taking another level, sort of the next step. So she was really solid, and it felt like all the matches, even if some of the matches were pretty close, we felt that she was like, one size bigger than her opponent. So she was doing very well.
What do you think? I think her ranking now is 334 when I looked. What do you think about her possibilities to maybe in 12 months reach a slam?
Yeah, she has absolutely a potential for that. She's working hard, and she has this. She has good strokes, and she's sort of. She has been a bit injured this year, so she hasn't been playing that much this year. She has been a problem with the sort of the left wrist.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she has a very high level. She can play very, very good. So she sort of had to. There's some parts of her game she needs to develop to take the next step. But she definitely has the potential to reach the slam.
Mm-hmm. I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in Norway played your first round robin matches the first 2 days, right? So that means that after your loss to Greece, you didn't know if you were gonna go through to the playoff, or?
That's right. We actually calculated with it that we were gonna be first or second. So we knew that, but it was really, really tight, because we thought for a while there was a possibility to also finish third in the group, but actually we were safe after that. So that was, but it was a really close group, and we were really pretty lucky to sort of have the best set difference. So,
I see. So what did you do during that day off? Were you like looking at the other matches, or were you practicing, or what did you do?
We were looking at, me and Jörgen especially was looking at the other matches, and the girls were having massage and doing some physio stuff and just practice a little bit, but not much. Ulrike has sort of never been that how do you call it, like stiff in her legs. So that was like she was almost afraid she couldn't play on Friday.
Oh, really?
Because she played the first 2 days with the matches. I think she was 12 hours on court.
Oof. Okay.
Wow. She's not used to that, even if she likes to practice a lot. So that was sort of she couldn't almost walk on the Thursday.
So sort of lucky you had a day off then, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. If we look into the future for the Norwegian team, Malene will hopefully keep climbing and improving, and Ulrik is, I mean, a world-class double player, and obviously have a good level in singles as well. But besides those two, it's quite a leap to your third and fourth player, to be honest. What's your thought about that for the future, for next year and the next after, for example?
Yeah, that's right as you say. So it's just we're just trying to sort of. To put the work from our side to sort of make the top players better, but we also have to sort of get more players from under, like you say. Yeah. So it's just, I think a week like this is really important for the next two, especially for Lily Hosset that was in the team. Yeah. So she really got a sort of eye opener and saw like tennis in another perspective. And she also thinks, you know, that, it's not that far, you know. You always get the belief when you see good players and how they practice, and they are, and you can steal some things when you watch the good players. So I think that's really important. And so it's just we just have to work back home here with our national center, try and work hard with the junior players. We have to try to get the junior players to play more ITF tournament. Maybe we're still gonna have international tournaments in Norway to sort of try to make that that gap a little bit closer. So, but it's right as you say. After like Ulrike and Malene, it's a gap. So we have a few years to sort of try to make that gap a bit closer.
And how is it with Melanie Stocke? Is she playing regularly, or what's the status there?
No, she quitted her sort of professional career, so she still practice with us at the national center, and she's gonna play some club matches in the summer in sort of France, and and she's sort of working as a coach a bit also, so she's still involved with tennis and she practices regularly, so but she's not going for the professional career anymore.
Oh, I see. And finally, Fredrik, did you follow the Swedish or Danish team anything during the week?
Absolutely. So that was very exciting as well. So that was, yeah, we did.
Yeah, and maybe we can have a group next year with all the Scandinavian teams. Maybe
that would be very fun. That would be a lot of fun. And even if I work in Norway, I'm still Swedish. So of course I get very happy with the good Swedish results. And it's also, I mean, if you look a bit larger, it's really important for the Nordic countries also to sort of do well. I think it's if Sweden and Denmark and Finland can do well as well, I think that's good for us. And Finland was very unlucky in the Billie Jean King Cup. And I think the first three or four players got injured. So yeah, and they had some playing at college that couldn't play. So they really had a tough one. So. Okay. I feel for them, especially when they play at home. So that was a tough week for them. But we hope they come back.
I think so. Fredrik, thank you very much for joining us here, and good luck in the future.
Thank you very much.
If you want to continue listening to the rest of the episode, it's about 25 minutes left. Please head over to Scandinavian Tennis Pod. Search for that on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and then you can keep listening to the rest of the episode. You won't regret it. I think it's pretty interesting. It's a couple of pretty interesting topics left for me and especially Rune to discuss. So please subscribe to the Scandinavian Tennis Pod on the podcast app of your choice so that you don't miss out the next episode when it's being released.